It was precisely the same way in the 4th century concerning the Sunday circus and theater. The people, even the church members, would go to these instead of to church. And even if they went to both, it must be confessed that the Roman circus or theater was not a very excellent dish, what a mélange, to sit down before a man to prepare him for hearing the word of God. The Sunday circus and theater could not afford to keep open unless they could get a great many spectators, and so break up a great many congregations. And as they hurried the spectators fast unto perdition, they had to be shut on Sunday, so as to keep a great many congregations out of perdition. It is exceedingly difficult to see how a Sunday circus in the 4th century could hurry to perdition anyone who did not attend it, or how a Sunday train in the 19th century can hurry to perdition anyone who does not ride on it. And if any are hurried to perdition by this means, who is to blame, the Sunday train, or the ones who ride on it? And Dr. Johnson's complaint of the Sunday papers is of the same flimsy piece. If the Sunday paper gets into a man's house, where lies the blame? Upon the paper, or upon the one who takes it and reads it? Right here lies the secret of the whole evil now, as it did in the 4th century. They blame everybody and everything else, even to inanimate things, for the irreligion, the infidelity, and the sin that lie in their own hearts. When they shall have stopped all Sunday works, and all Sunday papers, and all Sunday trains, in order that the people may go to church and attend to things divine, suppose that then the people fail to go to church or attend to things divine, will the religio-political managers stop there? Having done all this that the people may be devoted, will they suffer their good intentions to be frustrated, or their good offices to be despised? Will not these now take the next logical step, the step that was taken in the 4th century, and compel men to attend to things divine? Having taken all the steps but this, will they not take this? Having compelled man to rest, will they stop short of an effort to supply the religious sanctions, which alone can prevent a day of enforced rest from being a day of enforced idleness, and consequently of wickedness? The probability that they will not is strengthened by the fact that the theory upon which this is carried on is identical with that of the 4th century, the theory of a theocracy. I have cited the theocratical purpose of the Woman's Christian Temperance Union. The National Reform Association, whose secretary stood at this table today to plead for the passage of this bill, aims directly at the establishment of a theocracy in this government. In their own words, they propose to make this republic, quote, as truly and really a theocracy as the Commonwealth of Israel, end quote. The Sunday Law Association also holds much the same theory. In the Elgin Sunday Law Convention, Dr. Mandeville, of Chicago said, quote, the merchants of Tyre insisted upon selling goods near the temple on the Sabbath, and Nehemiah compelled the officers of the law to do their duty, and stop it. So we can compel the officers of the law to do their duty. End quote. Nehemiah was ruling there in a true theocracy, a government of God. The law of God was the law of the land, and God's will was made known by the written word, and by the prophets. Therefore, if Dr. Mandeville's argument is of any force at all, it is so only upon the claim of the establishment of a theocracy. With this idea the view of Dr. Crafts agrees precisely, and Dr. Crafts is General Field Secretary for the National Sunday Law Union. He claims, as expressed in his own words, that, quote, the preachers are the successors of the prophets, end quote. Christian Statesman, July 5, 1888. Now put these things together. The government of Israel was a theocracy. The will of God was made known to the ruler by prophets. The ruler compelled the officers of the law to prevent the ungodly from selling goods on the Sabbath. This government is to be made a theocracy. The preachers are the successors of the prophets, and they are to compel the officers of the law to prevent all selling of goods and all manner of work on Sunday. This shows conclusively that these preachers intend to take the supremacy into their hands, officially declare the will of God, and compel all men to conform to it. And this deduction is made certain by the words of Professor Blanchard, in the Elgin Convention, quote, in this work we are undertaking for the Sabbath, we are the representatives of God, end quote. and the chief of these representatives of God will be but a pope again. Because when preachers control the civil power as the representatives of God, a pope is inevitable. These quotations prove to a demonstration that the whole theory upon which this religio-political movement is based is identical with that of the 4th century, which established the papacy. They show also that the means employed, Sunday laws, by which to gain control of the civil power to make the wicked theory effective, are identical with the means which were employed in the 4th century for the same purpose. The next question is, will they carry the theory into effect as they did in the 4th century and onward? In other words, when they get the power to oppress, will they use the power? A sufficient answer to this would seem to be the simple inquiry, if they do not intend to use the power, then why are they making such strenuous efforts to get it? If Congress lets them have the power, they will surely use it. Human nature is the same now as it was in the 4th century. Politics is the same now it was then. And as for religious bigotry, it knows no centuries. It knows no such thing as progress or enlightenment. It is ever the same. And in its control of civil power, the cruel results are also ever the same. How appropriate, therefore, is it that Cardinal Gibbons should endorse the National Sunday Bill? How natural, indeed, that he should gladly add his name to the number of petitioners in support of the movement to secure legislation in the interests of the Church. He knows just how his brethren in the 4th century worked the same kind of scheme. He knows what the outcome of the movement was then, and he knows full well what the outcome of this movement will be now. He knows that the theory underlying this movement is identical with the theory which was the basis of that. He knows the methods of working are the same now as they were then. He knows that the means employed to secure control of the civil power now are identical with the means employed then, and he knows that the result must be the same. He knows that when religion shall have been established as an essential element in legislation in this government, the experience of 1500 eventful years, and the ingenuity and patient care of 50 generations of statesmen, will not be lost in the effort to make the papal power supreme over all here and now, as was done there and then. And in carrying out the instructions of Pope Leo XIII, that, quote, all Catholics should do all in their power to cause the constitutions of states and legislation to be modeled upon the principles of the true Church, the Cardinal assuredly is glad to have the opportunity to add his name to the more than 6 millions of Protestants who are set for the accomplishment of the same task. To those Protestants who are so anxious to make religion a subject of legislation, it now appears very desirable. And it also appears a very pleasant thing to secure the alliance of the papacy. But when they shall have accomplished the feat, and find themselves in the midst of the continuous whirl of political strife and contention with the papacy, not alone for supremacy, but for existence, then they will find it not nearly so desirable as it now appears to their vision, blinded by the lust for illegitimate power. And when they find themselves compelled to pay more than they bargained to, they will have but themselves to blame. For when they make religion a subject of legislation, they therein confess that it is justly subject to the rule of majorities. And then, if the Romish Church secures the majority, and compels the Protestants to conform to Catholic forms and ordinances, the Protestants cannot justly complain. Knowing as we do, the outcome of the same kind of movement before, we do not propose to allow this scheme to be worked out here without a decided protest.
You are entirely logical, because you say there should be no Sunday legislation by state or nation either.
Yes, sir, of course I am logical, all the way through. I want to show you the wicked principle upon which this whole system is founded, and the reason I do this is because the last step is involved in the first one. If you allow this principle and this movement to take the first step, those who get the power will see in the end that they take the last step. That is the danger. See how in the 4th century the logic of it ended only with the Inquisition.
Was the Inquisition abolished by the abolition of the Sunday laws?
No, but the principle of it was established by Sunday laws.
Then if the Inquisition was established by the Sunday laws, how was it abolished, but by the abolition of the Sabbath? How can you remove an effect except by removing its cause?
The Sunday laws never have been abolished.